Hey, it's Latif from Radiolab. Our goal with each episode is to make you think, how did I live this long and not know that? Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know. Listen wherever you get podcasts.
If Mitt Romney meets the definition of an also-ran, who meets the definition of a has-been or the definition of a trusted, loyal friend?
I think this is the most fundamental struggle of our time, and there is only one place to be, which is in the thick of it and trying to sort it out. And, you know, yeah, of course we can get out. We can be a medium-sized country that sort of hides itself away at the back and doesn't push itself forward and says to America, well, if you really think there's a problem, you go and sort it out. That's not what I want for my country. It's not what I believe the world should be like.
British Prime Minister Tony Blair proudly speaking of his decision to support the U.S. invasion of Iraq and appointing himself something of a cheerleader-in-chief of the entire Iraq operation. And that's something that over time that has become appalling to British citizens. And there is still unfinished business when it comes to the confused legacy of post-PM Blair, business that may put Tony Blair further in what meets the definition of the doghouse in terms of popularity in the UK right now. The report, known as the Chilcot Inquiry, contains information about whether the former prime minister made secret promises to former U.S. President George W. Bush in the lead-up to the Iraq War. Promises that may implicate Blair in the support of torture and other interrogation techniques that have already been revealed in the United States with major repercussions for the troubled Bush legacy. We're joined now by Anne McElvoy, economist, public policy editor. Anne, welcome to The Takeaway.
Hello, John.
So this week we've got David Cameron meeting with Barack Obama. We've got Tony Blair speaking at a panel off in Pennsylvania. How much pressure is there to release this information in the UK, and will it have implications on both sides of the Atlantic?
Well, I think the pressure has mounted as the delays to the so-called Chilcot report have gone on and on, because, of course, this pertains mainly to the invasion of Iraq, goes back to 2003, and all these years later, we've had various inquiries along the way, but this was intended to be the granddaddy of them all, and it's just been delayed and delayed and delayed. So I think there's an awful lot of suppressed expectation there and a feeling that this one really does have to bring out things that the other ones didn't. Otherwise, what have we been waiting for?
And there's certainly a degree of regret in Tony Blair's remarks in trying to explain what he may or may not have agreed to back in that period of 2003. Here's Tony Blair speaking in an interview with the BBC in 2007.
Whatever it began as, it is part of this wider struggle today. And if there's anything I regret about this period, it is I regret not having laid out for people in a clearer way what I saw as the profound nature of this struggle and the fact that it was going to go on for a generation.
Is that really what he regrets here? And will these letters show actually that he regrets something much more specific?
Well, I don't think Tony Blair, I've interviewed very recently for The Economist, I don't think he regrets in the sense that his enemies want him to regret, as in he is not trying to hide the fact that he's sorry, because he isn't sorry. So I think what he's trying to say there in the clip that you played, and also what he said to me very recently, is that he sees the whole Iraq adventure, misadventure, whatever you might like to call it, as part of this whole problem that the world had dealing with post-9/11 conditions and how we were to go about dealing with fundamentalism, about failed states, about people like Saddam Hussein who flouted the international will. Now, for many people, the war doesn't look like it was the right answer. But I think what he's saying is this was part of a context for all leading countries in the world. And unless you understand that, you're just going to say, well, that was a disaster. Why did you do that? You know, slap some sort of punishment or just bad opinion on Tony Blair and carry on as before.
What is the chance that these letters will pull him down from this high-minded, you know, we had a very difficult time and we had to get through it and all of that language, and basically show him admitting that he was willing to pay a price for all that that involved the torture of individuals?
Well, first, I don't know that he will concede that. I mean, I really don't feel able to sign up to that. I think what he will say is that if you take the context of the letters, they never look particularly good, I would suggest, knowing what we know now about what happened in terms of, you know, the forfeiture of some rights, about Guantanamo, about extraterritorial questioning and possible torture of suspects. I think that is a difficult area for him, because the impression I think the letters are likely to give is that he suggested that pretty much whatever the Bush administration did was all right by him.
Anne McElvoy is public policy editor for The Economist. Thanks so much, Anne.
Okay, thank you, John.